operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Portland.
Drink seltzer, smoke weed, and you can't sleep. Think about shooting birds. Everyone has got a violent streak. I think my face looks like glass, but my body feels plastic. Melt me into a bottle. I wish that I was a baby, sucking on myself, boogie down to the water. I thought that maybe I could be the lake's daughter. Because I float like an infant inside a bed, waves in the lake. It's got I feel like a child hiding behind your tombstone. But the graveyard's not lonely. Plus, who doesn't love a good cemetery? Plankton, but the lake is not lonely. No need for you to come with me.
Yo, 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 you're with Crumb the Villain, the guy with something in his eye. And today in studio, we want to know what you're listening to. We have some great guests with us. Gina from the band Millstone Grit, how you doing?
Doing wonderful, thank you.
Beth?
Good morning.
Thank you. Just a very gracious guest. And finally, we have Johnny Cool
in here. Yo, what's good?
From Johnny Cool and just the Cool Cats, or just...
No, just Johnny Cool, Stargazer.
Don't go blind. Don't go blind. So the song we just listened to was Slot Thrust, and that song is called Like a Child Hiding Behind Your Tombstone. And Gino, why don't you tell us about that song, since you brought it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I brought it in for two reasons. One is that it contrasts really heavily with the next song that we'd later play. But the lyrics are very obscure and strange, which is something that Sloth Ross does. And so a lot of the lyrics refer to things like fetuses and babies and being reborn. And for me, I mean, the way I the way I read that, you know, as a trans person, that's kind of how I feel. Is like looking back on my previous life, it seems like I did die and I am reborn. You know, that's what we call like our old birth names, like dead names, you know, that they're called that for a reason.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So the name you're given to at birth is called the dead name. And so, and there are references with tombstones, with graveyards, with like, you know, submerging yourself in a lake. And so I do feel like it is being reborn, and I didn't have the opportunity as an infant, as a child, as a teenager to be in the right self. So I'm like going through that all right now, and these obscure lyrics make it seem that way because it is a very abstract feeling and it's got very abstract lyrics, and I like the quirkiness and the awkwardness of it, so because it is a very quirky and awkward thing to go through.
But the lyrics are fun. Is it like, I imagine, is it at all fun to be reborn? I know it's difficult for sure, but like, is it, do you think that adds some levity to it?
Well, I mean, it's extremely exciting in that regards. But again, you know, there are darker references into the song, you know, with like being submerged in the lake, you know, and that in terms of the more, you know, depression, suicide, I don't know, a single trans person that doesn't have clinical depression. And so, you know, like that relates to it. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I try not to always just talk about the extremely negative sides of that community. But, you know, it is a pretty, you know, when it comes to like suicide rates, it is pretty appalling. So I thought that was the appropriate little thing, and obviously it's there, we all know about it, but it's not something that we, you know, it's not nice to necessarily dwell on if your community is only known for having a 41% suicide rate, so, you know.
Very high suicide rate. Mm-hmm. What about y'all? Y'all listen to that? That was your first time listening to it?
You know, I think it was pretty cool, like how, you know, I like how that intro starts out real, like mellow, and it's like, and then it just drops real heavy. I wasn't expecting that, so.
It was going to be very soft the whole time, for sure, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I could read this as something like, you know, it's like at the lake, you know, it's like real vibe, and all of a sudden it's going real like.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a sucker for quirky songs that have really dark underlying meanings. Obviously, just, you know, touching on really sensitive subjects that are really heavy that no one wants to talk about, but are every single person, regardless of your gender, race, situation, faces, all that.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear it in a fun song.
For it to be, like, not so depressing all the time. Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds awful to make jokes about it, but sometimes that's the only way you can get through stuff.
Yeah.
Especially really heavy things.
Yeah. The idea that you shouldn't be humorous about something is really bizarre, especially, like, darker things. So it's really uncomfortable most of the time. And most people laugh when they're uncomfortable.
Right. To the laugh and cry.
That's true.
Yeah. Might as well laugh.
It's like comedians, you hear like they go through the most, you know, in their life, because, you know, they're the funniest because they're just like, man, I'm hiding so much trauma. And
you just want to make other people feel better at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I get, before we move on to like any of the next songs, I do, I want to ask, when you listen to a song like this, what makes it so important to you today, especially when, like, if you look at things happening, like you have like that, or what would you call that, like it was a protest and then like
Charlottesville,
when you see things like that happening, when you listen to music like this, like obviously that's a different community than yours, but that's like a community diametrically opposed to yours.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this is something that could perhaps help bridge that divide? Do you think there are people in the alt-right who might love this music, even if, even if Sloth Ross would hate that?
I don't think music is necessarily universal in the sense that it's supposed to appeal to everyone, because then you lose all purpose. If it appeals to everyone, it appeals to nobody. And if you have that much of a blanket statement, they're meaningless. Maybe somebody from the alt-right may enjoy that song. I don't know how they'd feel. I'm pretty sure the singer is queer, so I don't think they'll think too much about that. Obviously, this song was around for a couple of years before the event in Charlottesville, and obviously the incidents leading up to Charlottesville has been in the entirety of the history of this country.
Right.
And it's just sad to see people able to mobilize in the thousands, when previously they were, in the past 10 years, sort of put to the corner of the
more
internet. And so, you know, with the new administration failing to condemn, you know, white nationalists, I think it's allowing them to have such a protest. But, you know, to think that this is, you know, something normal, extraordinary, or something like out of the ordinary. I think that'll be a mistake, and I'll be ignoring the significant past. But I'm not going to try to make these connections to the events to the song, because you know they're completely separate things, and you know this thing incident only happened a little bit ago. So
all right, well, you heard it here first. Sloth Thrust, not for the alt right. Don't want any fans in the dicks.
So. Yeah.
All right. On that note, we're gonna have Beth play one of the songs that you brought in. It's, he says you have Avery Camacho, and the song's called Drive. All right. Well, let's cue that up. Avery Camacho with the song Drive. Now, Beth, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a really good friend of mine, and him and his girlfriend recorded it when they were overseas in Iraq. Oh, yeah.
All right. So you brought that song in because you're just a huge fan of their music, or because you support the troops?
I mean, a little bit of everything. It's, you know, it's kind of crazy to have somebody really close to you in a situation like that, and I mean, I can only imagine what it's like to be overseas and then to be able to do something creative and sort of find an outlet to to, you know, express yourself in a way that means a lot to you in such a hard situation.
What do you guys think of that?
I really like the vibe of it. It's just like, it has that like cool walk vibe, you know, like the, I'm a sucker for the, for that drum pattern, you know, and then like the way, that heavy synth is behind there. I was just listening to it like, yeah, man, shoot. I can listen to this like leather jacket music to me.
Yeah. I really liked sort of the throbbing bass that was like continues through the song. I
like the way you say that.
You know, because I mean, that's the thing with electronic music. It can be so easy to lose everything when it's all digital, and to have something that, you know, does, you know, hit you in the heart that way in a physical way, I think, is really important to stand out. So that's what stuck out to me.
Definitely, yeah, it was very vibrant because it's very easy to make it flat. On that note, what do you guys think about like the, as far as like electronic music doing things like that, like trying to make something full sounding, like having an interesting backbeat as opposed to live drums? Do you think it's more interesting, less interesting, more difficult, less difficult to bring out a flavor? Or
I think when you like, especially when you have the combination, like sometimes, because I do like digital or what do you say, in studio production, and then I do also I have a live band, so getting when you have in studio production, you can really you can manipulate it, you can have certain effects, you know. It's just sometimes it's harder to make your live drums real beefy, and like sometimes when you're stoned, you want the bass, you know, you want the drums, you know, you want that effect. But electric music, I think it's just, it is a bit, I mean, I can't say easier, it's not the word, but it's just more accessible to like effects and
Gina, you make a lot of live music, so.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, my personal preference has always been combining the electronics with live sound with a real instrument. So I usually gravitate more towards industrial music and in the realm of electronics because I need it to hear a real drum. I need to hear that. And I think, like, Nine Inch Nails does a really good job with that, with having all these effects and putting them really powerful, having enormous dynamics, yet still having that power of a band. It still sounds like a live band despite having all these effects, and so that's where I gravitate towards.
On the comment of accessibility, do you think the fact that you can make more music by yourself with electronic instruments sort of lowers the barrier to entry in a negative way, but allows the ability to make more music is intrinsically a good thing, right? Like, you want more people to be able to make music, do you think?
That's true. Being able to put that music together yourself, especially when you understand how instruments work, like you understand what the, you know, you're not going to do something.
Should you have to though?
I mean, well, sometimes like if you have, okay, so if you have like, if you lay down like a synth horn line or something like that, you don't want to do something where a horn player would be like, I wouldn't, you know, that's nothing we would do.
Well, would you just hire a horn player at that point? Like, isn't sort of like the fun, like you have artists like Jimi Hendrix who like never learned to read music, but they were fantastic at guitar. Like, isn't it sort of, part of the appeal is that anyone can do it, and so you get these like unique sounds and these unique ideas, because without that training, you don't have the blinders on that say, I can only move in this direction. Or do you think it just makes music sound awful because these people don't know what they're doing?
But you have like, oh, you said something?
Oh, yeah, I was saying like technology is a democratization of music. It means it's more accessible to various people, especially people of lower classes, right? Music, you know, in many senses was a very elitist thing to be able to afford to read music, go to music school and perform for the royal families of Europe or in whatever case. And so now you have things like synthesizers in the 80s, or now you have the internet, you know, all the advent of YouTube. And so it means more people could get into it. Also means it's going to be more rubbish music as well as more great music. It's just an increase in quantity, yeah. And does not necessarily change the quality, but it means people who couldn't do it now are able to do it. So that's, I see it's a positive thing.
That's real. There's like, even like, I don't read music, you know. I have my homie in my band, he's definitely my translator, you know. Everybody helps me, like there's different chords and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just some, you know, just experimenting with sounds, and you come up with something cool, you know, you never know. But I think it's available for everybody who has a musical idea, at least.
That's Beth?
I mean, I don't make music, So I.
But you make art, right?
Yes. Yeah. So.
Did you listen to it?
I mean, like, I do. But I'm tone deaf in the fact of like how it's produced, and you know, I have a bunch of friends that make music, and when they start creating things, and I'm watching, it's like speaking a foreign language to me. Like,
but if you take something like Photoshop to live photography or like painting, like digital art and like digital mediums, as opposed to like, how do you feel about like that? Obviously you're lowering the barrier, but at the same time,
if you're doing what makes you happy and it makes you feel good and it makes other people feel good, do it.
Right on. A good last word. And that's a great transition into the next song, George Duke, classic, For Love I Come.
Life
was George Duke with For Love I Come, chosen by none other than the coolest Johnny Cool. Johnny Cool, why don't you tell us a little bit about that song?
Well, this song is more about, it's like our connection to each other with like light, and how we're all connected with light and love. Like, it's like, if you are about that, I'm your friend. I'll be here. You know, he spoke from as if he was from a distant planet, and like, I'm gonna come to Earth. I'll be, you know, if your civilization is about peace, you know, I'll be there. And it was pretty cool. It was just like, and it sounds psychedelic, so I'm just like, I could just trans out to the sounds. He has like electric sounds in there, crazy solos, and he does his, it's like his traditional guitar riff, where he's like, it's like a, almost sounds like country, but it just has this like little part. But it's pretty cool to me. It's just like, it's a song I can listen to, I can relate to.
And it does fit in perfectly with the theme of like electronic music and live music. There's a lot of synthesizers, early synthesizers, being played live.
Yeah, and then George Duke is, I like him too, because he's a Capricorn, just like me, and he's just like,
long,
you know,
walks on the beach and all that.
Man, he's a wizard, you know, he's a wizard with it. So I just respect that, the musicianship in that song. But there is a huge chunk of instrumental break in there, just because I know he's like, he has like a degree in all different types of music, so he likes to show that off and like.
Is that cool? Like, is that a cool thing?
I mean, for back then, you know, because when you didn't, I don't know, George Duke was probably born in like, well, he was born in 1946. And so I guess his era, you know, having all that under his belt, it's like, because you want to, it's not like you get that huge college talk like, oh, let's go to school and, you know, whatever. And it was, I don't know, but I was just impressed with like him blowing through all that and just being able to take jazz and exceeding it to whatever he made it to. So,
but it doesn't feel like he sort of, all right, so if you take a song like Slot Thrust, like, mm-hmm. This is a song who I feel like they had fewer resources, not to disparage Slot Thrust, but I think they may have had fewer resources than George Duke, and they were able to put something together that was meaningful and impactful, not in like a way that can like pull to detract from George Duke, but their lyrics are, as quirky as they are, ring true and prescient to specific communities. George Duke, I've been listening to George Duke my entire life, and I've never been able to say like, oh, hey, George Duke, this guy, he's got a hard point on this. It's really sort of been like the longest guitar solo I've ever listened to. Like, a lot of his music, and a lot of jazz from that era really strikes me as this, like, people talk about, like, Miles Davis is like, Bitches Brew. And it's not that the songs are bad, but I feel like the instrumentation in jazz at that point really detracted from what jazz originally formed as, which is, like, sort of this, like, punk rock rebellion. And then by the time jazz was, like, this mainstream thing, it's sort of like the hair metal, in the sense that it's, like, sort of about, it's very abstract and it's very cool, and people who are about it are, like, all about it. And it's, like, it's cool to be into, but I don't know, like,
What really captured me about George Duke is like, he has like songs like his song like Seasons, which is like a straight up jazz ballad, but then he has like messages from like even from his, you know, not just from his cover art, but like he I love his how do you say, his galactic side of his, you know, it seems like that was a thing from like artists from like Sun Ra to him. I can relate, because I relate to like other star seeds, and so when you hear that, those topics, instead of just like, you know, like bluesy my baby left me kind of music, it's kind of like, man, that's cool, but you know, when somebody talks about from like another planet, and this is like 30-40 years ago, it's just like, whoa, like I want to talk about that now, and it's something that would, it's a topic that would never drop.
You don't think there's an interest, that people are more interested in something that they're related to? I think more people can probably relate to their baby leaving them than, you know, go like stargazing. As much people like to look at the stars.
Well, I would sort of discount that, because there was a lot of sci-fi related music lyrics in the late 1960s, because there was a huge craze with NASA, and during the space race with the Soviet Union,
literally going to the
everybody
moon.
Was like really into it, and you had a lot of things, you know, like David Bowie's, you know, Ziggy Stardust. You have influences that, you know, today with like Janelle Monáe's Electric Lady, you know, which is very much a sci-fi concept album in and of itself. So I think it is a product of the time that people really would relate to seeing the stars as they would with their child, because it was talked about. However, after the moon landings, funding for NASA went down, you know,
Challenger
advertisement for NASA went down, interest for NASA went down. So now it might not seem as a relatable thing, but it definitely was in the era that he would have come of age.
Yeah.
And to that point, if it was so relatable because of what was happening at the time and what was because in the social consciousness, don't you think that more songs that are about like ground level politics is the wrong word, but ground level interests are more relevant in the sense that like those songs mattered because NASA was such a big deal, because people were going to the moon. You think what's happening on the ground right now, people should be hearing more about that in the same way that people should be hearing more about space when we were going to space?
I mean, I feel like that it should be a topic because we're so connected to. I mean, we view space as so disconnected, like it's way out there, but like
which, a lot. By definition, it is.
By definition, it is. But yeah. But we're still so connected to it. We're still so connected to all those, you know, all those stars out there. You know, we're it's very much not too far from how what we can do. You know, and we don't want to leave things in the hands of just NASA because it's like they're not my masters of space. You know, they may know some stuff, but to me,
ambassadors for sure.
You know, but to me, I feel like as people, you know, the more we talk about it, we have our own NASA. It was just a bunch of stuff. It's just a bunch of people that. Got together, you know, on some scientific stuff, but reality is like I feel like what George Duke was talking about back then kind of is that's what sparked me, you know, because there's a bunch of musicians who have like Lonnie Liston Smith who have some
dope,
really
dope, very
dope stuff, you know, but what's the message, you know, like, you know, so I feel like George Duke's message caught my attention, at least as far as like Starseed.
Right on. And Beth, we're just gonna throw it to you real quick. Okay. Hard stance. You think music should be about what people see every day, or do you think music should be about something abstract that people can aspire to?
That's impossible to answer.
All right. Well, then on that note, we're gonna move on to the second song by Slot Thrust. It's a cover of Happy Together, and we're gonna cue that up.
Imagine me and you, I do. You day and night, it's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you're the one for me and ease my mind, imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together.
That was a Sloth Thrust cover of Happy Together, originally performed by, who was that originally performed by? St. James, our producer?
The Turtles.
The Turtles. That was way sicker than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
That was dope. That was really dope.
That was dope.
Do you think, but my only question with that is, do you think that they're either the Turtles or Sloth Thrust is being sarcastic?
I mean, I think one of the purposes of doing a cover is to, I mean, doing a cover and doing it the same way is meaningless. It's like this shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. It's like, what's the point?
Vince Vaughn needed a career.
And it didn't do so well for him. But it's like... The song's recognizable, you know, throughout the verses. But when the chorus hits, it's almost it's so hard to tell. And all the horns and the bright, happy part that the Turtles bring in 1967, it's all gone. And then they have this introduction of this weird noise bit, and then this huge growl, just like screaming these lyrics of, you know, I want to be, you know, very romantic lyrics for 1967 standards, you know, and then it just becomes this like dark, and I love it. I just love that contrast. I love how different it is, and I love that they're able to really make it into their own, and it's unexpected. That's the other best thing, you don't expect it.
And very dope. Uh-huh. And not too ham-fisted. What do you guys feel about that?
Well, I thought it was really dope. I never heard that song in that way before, so it was cool. I can't even say I'm not really into screaming, but I have a buddy who does it, and I'm getting used to, I mean, not used to it, but I'm getting into it. So I recognize how it is a talent. So it was pretty cool.
And not before you thought you were talentless to scream.
No, I just thought it was like, man, I'm like, it was just like, it was a texture that I wasn't, you know, it's like trying new food. At first you're just like, no, I don't know, you know, it's just a texture. So I'm a texture kind of person. So it was like a rough texture for me. I'm like smooth. Like,
wow, that's a brilliant. Jazz. Yeah, that was the best answer I've ever heard. Anyone ever. Beth, do you have opinions? Do you have thoughts? Are you just chilling out? Thanks for bringing the mimosas, by the way.
Yeah,
we appreciate
yeah.
that.
I'm just here for the mimosas, honestly.
Beth brought the mimosas. Yeah. Thank you very much. We'll edit that part out. Don't worry about it. Do you have any opinions? We'll stop the show. Do you have any opinions on anything that's happened so far?
I'm just happy to be here. I messed up. I wasn't listening because I was pouring mimosas when that song was playing. So that's why I can't have an opinion. When you gave me the stare down, the 1,000-mile stare, I was like, I messed up.
Trying to do my job here.
But I hope that tastes good.
It does. It tastes fantastic.
Too sweaty.
On the note of covers, your song that you played first was, again, it was not a cover, but the original.
Reminiscent
of Kavinsky's Night Call. The song was not a direct cover, but obviously what term would you use? Like a...
Oh, it's a cover.
It's a cover, but...
It's a cover, but that's drastically been rearranged. And I think those are the best covers, the ones that are totally rearranged, so...
When they... Because they used that song, why do you think they felt the need to rearrange this piece? Like, as a song like Happy Together, which is just anthemic 60s song.
Yeah, again, it's the contrast. It's the unexpected contrast. And a lot of Sloth Thrust is that, you know, we talked about before when it's the previous song, like A Child Howling Behind Your Tombstone, how it starts off all sweet and everything, then it's got a bit of a, you know, kicks in. And it's still, you know, a happy tune. But they're a very quirky band. And if you listen to them in interviews, they're totally awkward. and it's
do great
absolutely,
on the show, then.
Yeah, no, they are absolutely hilarious. And I think it is a bit of a sense of humor. And, you know, sometimes people take themselves too seriously in the music industry, and sometimes we all need a bit of a laugh, and you can have a laugh and appreciate, you know, the sheer gravity of the sounds that you can make. So I think it's got a little bit of sarcasm in it, and I think it's got a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing. So
you think it matters what the Turtles think?
Sorry?
Do you think it matters what the Turtles think since they put out the song? Do you think they're like, oh, we don't like you guys screaming all this?
Honestly, I don't think they care.
They're so happy. I wouldn't remember them.
I mean, not to like slag off the Turtles or anything, but they haven't been relevant since 1967. One hit wonder. So.
Animal bands, yeah, those animal bands.
Yeah. I don't know why naming your band after animals was so popular in the 60s, but.
I was gonna say it kind of reminded me of
The Cure and Dinosaur Jr. and their cover of Just Like Heaven and the departure between those two versions.
Dinosaur Jr. did a cover of Just Like Heaven?
Yeah, you haven't heard it?
I guess. I'm not going to hear it right now.
You should probably play it.
Right. No.
I can't. I'm not allowed to.
That's not the show.
Sorry.
Different show.
It's a different show. All right. Well, then, Beth, because we want you to talk more, we're going to segue right to
your... weirdest thing ever.
We want you to talk more?
Yeah.
Beth, we want to watch your mouth move. Yeah. We're going to play Avery Camacho's song. I bet. Let's go ahead and cue it up. That was Avery Camacho with the song I Bet. Just a great ditty, in my opinion. Beth, you chose that song. What do you think about it?
Well, we're just going to get really heavy in the morning, apparently, because it was also about mental illness and suicide attempts and just putting it all out there. And, you know, it starts out with the vision in my head, like the scenario, the imagery is sort of inviting everyone in your life to this table and just let it all out. Just put it all out on the table and having a conversation, because everybody has their own demons. Everybody, you know, has their own battles, and just making it not a secret. And just...
And with the title, like, I Bet, do you think they're reckoning on acceptance, rejection, another suicide attempt?
Yeah, all of it. Everything, all encompassing. You know, it's
the nature of the gamble.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. You know, and it's... Yeah. You should listen to the whole thing sometime.
We can. You can just go ahead. There'll probably be a link to it attached to this episode of the radio show, but we will not do that right now, because that's not how we do
this podcast. No, I said you should.
I will. Absolutely. Yeah. I can do that anytime. Except for right now. Anytime, as long as it's 2 hours from right now, absolutely, I can do that. What did y'all think? I got a very like something corporate vibe from that. If you guys using, I think you've heard something corporate. You've never heard a band?
I do not know that band enough to speak about it. So
I never heard of it either.
Never mind. What's like a 90 like Hawthorne Heights or like something from like the Ox?
Newfound Glory.
Yes.
The vocalist is like voice isn't high enough for that though.
I was talking about like the instrumentation.
Yeah, definitely the instrumentation.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that? How do you feel about it?
Man, I really like the vibe. I like the instrumentation of it. I was just trying to like when songs come on. My second reaction to music is the lyrics. So my first reaction is like the backbeat. So I was really just feeling the guitars and where it was going and the feel. Cause I'm like, man, what does this make me feel like? It has a certain nostalgia to it. So it made me feel like, I don't know, kind of like what the mood looks like outside, like kind of like gray, like
Portland,
Portland
natural,
and so I was just trying to see where it took me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more interested in the lyrics for that one and your description of it. So I'd prefer to have a rundown of the lyrics before I really say it, because it was a pleasant tune and everything, but from that little sample, I don't feel like I've got the full thing. So it sounded a bit ordinary, but I just don't think I've really delved too much into that. So.
And on that note, I feel like there's another question I'm going to ask you guys a little bit later. But yeah, I really did dig the instrumentation, and your description of it made me way more interested in listening to it. But I don't know, I like this band Ivy Camacho that you're playing right here. Thanks for bringing them to us, Beth.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate that. Do you have anything else you'd like to say about it? Because that does sort of seem like the song that I would love to discuss once I'd heard the whole thing, but because for some reason in recording this, I hadn't.
I'm interested in checking them out. Just from that, those two songs were so different, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, wow, I love that with artists when they have really different, you know, a selection of music, a variety. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
All right. Well, then on that note, I do want to make just a very smooth and very natural transition to our final song picked by Johnny Cool, George Duke. This song is going to be called Fly Away.
Chains of time have passed me by. It's vain to live your life a lie.
The crowd just stood and stared.
Their eyes see only bliss. How could I come to this? But fate was plain to see. We'll be right back.
And that was Fly Away by George Duke, the final song picked by Johnny Love. Oh, Johnny Cool. My mistake. What? Oh, we just met.
It's all good. Yeah, shoot. That song, I found out about that song because Kanye, Mary Benari, and Fabolous did it. Not really a cover, but Kanye sampled it, and Mary Benari, the violinist, like
what song is that?
They just called theirs Fly Away too.
Was that on Late Registration or something?
No, it was on her album actually. She did a whole project with like it had like Pharrell March. It had like all types of artists on there, and she just really Kanye conducted the whole. I can't say conducted the whole project, but he was a big part of her project. And she was part of his project, so.
Huge producer role.
When I was listening to George Duke, I'm like, oh, this is the song they use, you know. And then so, but this whole album, Guardian of the Light, reminded me of like a movie soundtrack. And so, this made me feel like I was in the 80s. I didn't get to grow up in the 80s. I was born in the 80s, but I'm like, wow, this is what people was thinking, you know, like.
It almost has like this like anti Bowie like sentiment to it. Not that like I feel like when I was listening to that, there's something that was tangible in that music that I feel like Bowie's was very like danceable and poppy and abstract, not in a negative way, but like that's just the way it sounded. Mm-hmm. I definitely got a vibe where that was like not because he's a black guy, but definitely just soulful music, and there was just like a certain amount of richness, not like thickness, but like it's just a richness all the way through the production. And Gina, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of David Bowie's point is to, especially like in the mid-70s with sort of young Americans, your songs like Fascination, which is very bass-heavy, slap-based, you know, which is what the songs, I think it's very much an emulation on Bowie wanting to reinvent himself, as he always had done with the disco scene that was really popular in the mid-70s.
And on George Duke?
Huh?
And on George Duke?
Yeah, so I think, you know, he was very, wait, what year was that released?
This was late 80s.
So oh, late 80s. Okay, yeah. Never mind. So this is, okay. I thought it was mid 70s. So I think so this is an emulation of a previous time, actually. Mm-hmm. This isn't necessarily. So yeah, so that's a different context speaking about it.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, for the last portion of the show, we're going to introduce a new segment called What Aren't You Listening To? Because people like to be nice when they listen to music. So we're going to start with you, Gina. What aren't you listening to?
I am not listening to music that assumes a cis-hetero standard when it comes to songs about romance or anything that assuming that it's always the cis boy and girl thing.
It's a lot of music.
It is so overdone.
That's a lot of music.
And that's what, you know, it's bland. It doesn't mean that I necessarily hate the individual songs, but I hate that is the default setting. So it's not about the individual. It's like that is what a society, this is normal and everything else is abnormal.
Do you have anything that you specifically, like a specific genre that you feel like it's predominant, or like a specific band that you may have liked in the past?
Just anything K-pop. I despise it.
I say that as
a Korean person. So
K-pop, formerly the most like popular, like, I mean, isn't K-pop the biggest genre in the world?
So many people going to hate me at home, but it's just like it's so rubbish and it's so awful, and it's portraying this very strict beauty standard, and it has, you know, a very strict way of like how you're supposed to look and how everyone's and how you're supposed to appear in music videos, and so yeah, not a big fan.
Beth, what aren't you listening to?
I cannot get into dubstep.
Still, all these
forever.
Years, you can't listen to like house or like wobble or whatever the genre is.
It makes me want to have an anxiety attack as the most calm person in the world. Like, I'm cool, calm, Pete. Like, I just can't do it.
All these
years
later.
I listen to it and I want to die a little bit.
That's like taking a hard stance on like punk rock. That's a wave of the future. No. Dubstep is a new genre.
All dubstep.
For sure.
I can't do it. My friend just performed with GZA the other day. And
sounds gross.
He rapped to dubstep song, which is amazing. And he's like, I'm gonna get hated on so hard for this. And all my friends are just like, don't rap to dubstep. Can't do it. He did it, and it was amazing. But at the same time, like, I love my friend. He's doing what he wants to do. He's pursuing his passion. But I still want to die a little bit.
All right, Johnny Cool, what aren't you listening to?
Man, I'm gonna get a lot of heat for this, but right now, I'm not listening to conscious hip hop. Like, things that have, like, they tell you, I'm a conscious hip hop rapper. I'm gonna teach you about real hip hop, and I'm gonna tell you, I wanna get preached to. So I'm like, I just wanna.
If you wanna get preached to, you'd go to church on Sunday instead of a radio show.
I'm like, man, I can do my research. You know, there's a heck of documentaries on, you know, Netflix about the origins of hip hop, you know. So I'm like, I don't want to hear you tell me what to listen to while you're rapping to me. I'm like, I just want to hear a good song. You're like, what did you do? You know? So I was like, why am I hearing, you know, I don't want to get preached to. I know that's like the origins of, like, you know, hip hop is like knowledge, but it's like a certain way of being taught. So I was like, so right now I'm just taking a huge break on, it's a turnoff, you know, I'm just taking a huge break on being taught something in as far as, like, you know, what hip hop culture is. I know there's a bunch of people who want to know what it is, but we have so much music from, like, from here to, like, since, like, the early, late 70s about hip hop.
Yeah.
So I was like, what else is there to teach me, man?
No. Like, 20 years after rap came out, hip hop had, Common had a song called I Used to Love Her. It's like, when it's 20 years old, Common's like, it's already because. All right. Well, thank you for that hot take. Johnny Cool hates rap.
Man.
And Beth hates dubstep. And Gina, it sounds like you hate most music.
I'll take it.
Man.
No,
you can have whatever opinion you want, because you're probably going to be like, tell your friends about it, and they'll probably listen to it. So thank you guys for coming on. Do you have anything that you would like to plug, Gina?
Oh, my band, Oh Millstone Group, which has an album coming out in like 3 months called Dead Named. That'll be our second album.
So. Right on. Where can people find you?
Huh? On Facebook and Bandcamp.
Millstone Group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would just say Google Beth Myrick and that get my weird art.
Instagram, Twitter. Do you make?
I have
art?
An Instagram. It's Yeah Right Okay.
Yeah Right.
How do you spell Myrick?
Myrick.
All right, Twitter, that's it, that's it. So
that's it. I don't have a Twitter, art. I don't know how to use it. I can't tweet.
And it's visual art, is it?
It's spray paint and wood.
Spray paint and wood. Whoa. All right, yeah. It's a solid plug right there.
I use power tools.
All right, that sounds hot. I don't like the way you said that, though. Johnny Cool, do you have anything to plug?
Yes, I do. I have a website, Johnny, Jonny, cool. 86.com. It has all the latest updates on my shows and music. I just released a new song called Special Girl on Spotify, Apple Music. Shout out to the Rose Tribe, Galactic Star,
and Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram is Johnny Cool BIG. Business is good. So
right on. All right. Well, thank y'all for coming on the program. I really do appreciate it. And I guess next week we'll find out what more people are listening to. I'm Crumb the Villain. I'd like to thank my producer Saint James, the good people at KB Radio, and most importantly, you, the listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, believe in yourself, huh? Who else gon' believe in you? Who else gon' believe in you? Who else gon' believe in you? Believe in yourself, yeah. Who else gon' believe in you? Who else gon' believe in you? Who else gon' believe in you? Believe in yourself. Health is wealth. Gotta get mine faster than a step. Alright, I can make 100,000 just sitting by the steps. I can count 100,000 with my feet in the chair. I can pull the baddest broad in here. Put my hand pulled behind my back. One hand on the steering wheel. Two chains with the ponytail. Got the bodyguard concealed. Ill meaning a sickness. I use a pharmacy as a witness. I mean, anything around me that's against us, they can't be. Got God on my side. That's all I need to ride. See, that's all I need to vibe. Asking what I do tonight. That's really none of your business. Unless you wanna get in this. Rolls Royce, hey. Yeah, the doors is that way. The doors go that way. The doors go that way. Rolls Royce, hey. The doors go that way. The doors go that way. The doors go that way. Rolls Royce, hey. Yeah, my doors go that way. My doors go that way. Doors go that way. Rolls Royce, hey. Yeah, my doors go that way. My doors. My doors, I'm good, like Ye, I'm good, like Sean and Push, I'm good, okay, good, so Ye, good, oh way, oh man, look at me now. Used to have a killer crossover. Now I think I done crossed over. White fans at my rap show. So many chains on to give you the cold shoulder. So many chains on, I tell them move over. Beat these shit over here, boy. 100 acres on the property. Man, I might hit a deer, boy. I got felonies older, y'all. Hooking family time at the mall. Hooking 6'5", I never been small. Hooking, hooking, I'm a lot of real else. Yeah, 3 months to call, boo. I want some no.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, October 30th, 2017. In local news, a new study measuring housing unaffordability has placed Portland in the severely unaffordable category. The study